Welcome. We are Dave and Cece Roberts, and on this podcast, our desire is to connect our community through conversations about following Jesus by sharing our stories.
Stories are powerful because they can inspire, encourage, challenge, and connect, and we hope this story does just that. So as you listen, if there's something that resonates with you, send an email to the person sharing their story, which you'll be able to find in the show description. We talked with Todd and Lisa Whiteman. He works for a congressman, and she, after a robust career as a stay-at-home mom, is now teaching kids with autism in the public school.
We had a wonderful conversation with Todd and Lisa, and the thing that stood out to me was the faithfulness of God. Both of them have different stories, different ways that God got a hold of their heart, but he is faithful to pursue us and pursue relationship with us. And so let's hop into this conversation, and I know you're going to be encouraged by it. And let's start with Lisa. Why don't you tell us about growing up and in your relationship with Jesus?
My home life was wonderful. One of those couldn't ask for better. Grew up in a loving family, going to church all the time. And when I was five, something just clicked. I just remember very vividly being in my room. I don't know if I was cleaning or what I was doing, that just singing the songs we had learned at church to come into my heart, Lord Jesus. And it's like, I can do this. And so I did. And I told my mom about it and just really have always been pretty involved in church and youth group and did a couple of missions trips, you know, high school, college age, and just have always had a desire to serve. Pretty simple for me.
Wow.
How about you, Todd?
Grew up in a fantastic home as well. Very, very loving home. However, it was different than Lisa's. My mom was a believer. My dad was not. My brother was on fire. I was not. I went to church, but I went begrudgingly because my dad worked most Sundays. My mom would drag me kicking and screaming when I'd just as soon stay home and throw sticks in the pond or watch football. So I grew up in a what I would call a half Christian home, but wasn't a believer myself. And I did not come to Christ until my senior year in college. And so just had some circumstances in my high school, like specifically my senior year, that really put me off as to pursuing faith as a young person, and really colored me pretty dark for probably 3-4 solid years.
Todd, could you share a little bit of what that was?
Yeah. So when I was in between my junior and senior year in high school, my best friend, it was July 4th and actually July 3rd, he and I had spent the night fishing together kind of late out. And we had so much fun. We were going to do it again the next day on the holiday. I worked super early in the morning, woke up, I should say later in the evening, to a phone call after I was taking kind of a cat nap. And it was a mutual friend telling me that Aaron had been killed in a pool accident. It crushed me in a lot of ways because I was supposed to call him earlier in the evening so that we could go out and kind of repeat the prior evening's fun. So I felt kind of some ownership / responsibility for that. But part of the story is that Aaron had laid down his own life. He actually jumped in a swimming pool that was full of electricity and saved three other kids and ended up dying himself in the process. And so it really challenged me. I remember saying to my dad that I would have a difficult time following a God that would take the life of somebody that by everybody's stories emulated his own son. So it was just tough to reconcile that.
So where did that lead you in life?
In real dark holes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted nothing to do with faith. I really didn't want anything to do with other people except for, you know, a handful of people that I had some trust in at the time and would let me kind of self-medicate and be angry be frustrated, be challenged. So it certainly pushed me much, much further away.
I feel like that is a sentiment that happens to a lot of people. A tragedy happens and then it really dive bombs their faith. So one of the things, one of our purposes in doing these conversations is to put up emails at the end. So if somebody else maybe is feeling that way, they could maybe contact you. Would you be okay if we put up your email and someone is walking through a tragedy like that and could reach out about how you dealt and processed that?
Sure.
So how did you get out of that? Talk about getting out of that.
It wasn't instantaneous. I kind of self-sabotaged to the point where the only school I could show up to was Indiana Wesleyan. Thank goodness for open enrollment. Pretty quickly transferred to Indiana University in my sophomore year. It only got deeper and darker there. You know, God chases down the one, right? He was doing that even when I couldn't recognize that. I kind of had this moment when I was in Bloomington, Indiana in the fall of 92. You know, just the future wasn't going to be bright if I didn't, you know, make some changes. So was able to go back to Indiana Wesleyan. It was not an instantaneous turn. I was still a very angry, bitter, unapproachable, frustrated young man still. Was at least open to dropping some of that off and met folks like Lisa, who was just super consistent in her faith. One of many things that made her attractive. I had a coach at Indiana Wesleyan. I played both golf and soccer, and he was diligent in his pursuit as well, and just consistently shared the gospel with me. But what I appreciate about my bride and folks like Coach Dan, they were honest about the stupid things I was doing in my life. And they didn't like fleece that, you know, they'd say things like, "Whitey, you're being stupid, but I'm going to be here the whole time. And when you're ready, you know, to have a conversation about Jesus, we'll do that."
So you guys met at Indiana Wesleyan University. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lisa, hearing your story at five, giving your life to the Lord, and then just faithful. And I'm going to serve, I'm going to go to youth group. Todd, your story is different. Experience a tragedy, go down a hole. The Lord pursues you and over time rescues you out of that hole. What did it look like for the two of you to come together in a relationship and bring those two perspectives when it comes to following Jesus together? What was that like?
Both being in athletics, we ran into each other a lot. We had been introduced by a mutual friend when Todd transferred back to Indiana Wesleyan spring of my sophomore year. We kind of hung around the same circles maybe for about a year. And it was Todd had a car and I did not. And I needed to get new running shoes. I mean, you're in the farmlands of Indiana. There's no buffers, no barriers. It's sub-zero, winds blowing. You want to take me to go get shoes, don't you? Just sitting in the dining hall.
The question that answers itself.
Yep.
We talked all the time. We'd see each other till curfew and then get back to our rooms and talk on the phone for another 2 hours. And after 3 months, we were finally like, okay, what's this look like? Because by this point, we're ready to head home and figure out the next steps. And that was kind of it.
But what's interesting is I still wasn't a believer at that point. And Lisa, being super, super consistent, was like, hey, we're, you know, we can do this, but like to go to these things and, you know, that won't work. And so we kind of talked about that a little bit, and that was good because again, I need to know where the target is, so to speak. And, but it took some time. I just, again, just dragging around a ton of baggage and like literally years, like a year and a half of her giving me space, but yet those reminders of, you know, what will be important in a relationship that's defined beyond dating. And
then I remember saying, because, you know, if at some point it got to where we were looking at getting married or what that might be like, that knowing biblically to not be unequally yoked, I did say to him that I would like to say that if it got to that point and you had not yet made a decision, that I would say it's not going to happen. But I said, I don't know how I'll feel if and when that that would take place. With that, Tad was very open to going to occasional church services or talking about it and asking questions and being vulnerable. And so from that perspective, it wasn't a decision that we needed to make right away. It was a decision that I said, I don't want you to make it just because for the end result of us potentially being able to be together.
You don't say yes to following Jesus for a girl.
He did not.
I have tried. So when did you surrender your life ultimately to Jesus?
Like, it was in my senior year. I want to say about halfway through. Indiana Wesleyan does spiritual emphasis weeks. And so they would every day a week chapel, and then they do evening services too, you know. And our coach was just super faithful in this stuff, and he would have us sit as a team and go. And, you know, in those darker days, I had a ton of baggage, things I did to myself, but also things that I felt like I did to others as well, were just big burdens, you know, big buckets of shame, if you will. And I'm a fixer. It's carried into my career. It's who God made me to be. And so interestingly enough, I'm racking my brain over fixing these sins and ended up in tears. And what was interesting, I look up and my coach is right next to me. And the cool thing was, like, before my head went in my hands, he was like four people down, but like he just saw what was happening. He said, Whitey, what's up? And I said, I don't know how to fix this stuff. I don't know how to fix the wrongs of the past few years. And he's a smart aleck just like me. And so he says, yeah, you can't. And I'm like, what kind of answer is that? Like, you're supposed to be here for me, right? He's like, you can't. You don't get to do that part. Jesus already did that. You're bought and paid for. The only thing you need to come to grips with is that you're worthy. Like, you're worthy of his redemption, and it's already done. You can either accept that or you can walk away again. I'm like, all right, I'll accept it. It was in that moment. The last time I had shed a tear was at my friend's funeral. And I walked to her apartment and said, hey, I can cry again. And there were a lot of things I didn't do in that 4-year period. Like, I didn't go in a pool for I wouldn't even dip my toe in a pool. It was that moment. But in all honesty too, I had no idea what was next. You know, that was the beginning. That wasn't some final point for Lisa or Dan.
And then how soon after college did you get married?
So as soon as I graduated, and then began a whole nother journey through almost 25 years of marriage now. I think Todd's had 5 different careers. I've been a stay-at-home mom for almost 20 years before actually being led to work as a teacher, and not only to teach, but to, I had never been certified in Michigan, didn't work. I think I was only certified the first 5 years in Indiana, and, all I had to do was pass the Michigan teacher certification test, and I became a teacher after 20 plus years, no continuing ed or anything.
So what led you to do that? Because staying at home, that's a wonderful sacrificial role, serving, you know, your 4 kids and wonderful kids. And but now jumping into teaching, why?
I have always been involved in the schools, even as soon as the kids started going, I started, you know, just volunteering. And then after being a volunteer, ended up serving on school board for a few years. And I had always thought about subbing or doing something to where I could be at the school at the same time of my kids, but not necessarily be tied to being at school. Well, as soon as all the kids were in school, I happened to be on school board, and I couldn't work for myself, in essence. Thought I'd get back in there, got my sub certification, and instead of subbing, they had some instructional assistant positions open up, and the placement that they gave me was in the autism spectrum disorder program at West with Holland Public. And my first year there was a whirlwind, but just fell in love with the kids. That's what I did the summer of 19. But I passed a test in August. They sent me my certificate and a position opened up in October. I was hired in November.
So what is it about the school, that school environment? Because as long as I've known you for a while, you know, you have been involved in Holland Public Schools, even being on the board. Why throw yourself into that area?
I like being close to things. You know, we live in the city where once our kids started going there and we got to meet the teachers, I was just blown away by how many people of faith there were serving in the public schools and how great the need is for their fellow students and the families. Even to the point where I met a new family and the mom mistook me for somebody that she thought she had met at church. And we started a conversation. And at that point, the principal at Jefferson was allowing us to have a weekly prayer meeting in the building. And so being able to pray with these moms and invite, you know, another mom that had just moved here. From a diversity perspective, we had a Spanish speaking mom who would pray in Spanish. We had an African American mom. Everyone felt safe. Everyone felt loved. And it was a way that we could lift up our schools and the staff and our kids all together at the same time.
Todd, how about you? You're on your fifth career.
Well, I'll say one career with five stations. How about that?
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, go back to that wonderful home left that I had. My dad walked into the same factory gate for 40 years straight. So for us, and my brother and I have a high reverence for my dad's work ethic. So there was a false definition of career that was find your gate and walk into it and out of it for 40 years straight. That's not how God made me. And better yet, I'm married to a woman that's let me chase some things in my head that I can convert into part of my career. I've got a wonderful mentor, somebody that's been close to Lisa and I for probably the last 15 years. He's in his mid 80s now. And he drilled a couple things into me. The first one I would share is do that which others can't or won't do. And then bring that together with do the right things for the right reason with the right people at the right time. And Lisa's always been a check for me on those four things. And the other two as well is the kind of the can't or the won't. And so I've found myself blessed to kind of move back and forth in different sectors. My background's economics and management, and those are general enough that they don't have to be. So I've been able to swerve in and out of different areas. I spent time in banking. I started my career in the golf industry and managing golf facilities with other stints and finance and things like that. But for the last 15 or so years, I've been involved in politics in various ways. And that's where I find myself today, which is a pretty interesting space to navigate as a Christ follower. I think if I was on my own, I would, you know, certainly sometime in the last 6 months, I would have run for the hills. More often than not, Lisa affirms to me, hey, I know this is where God's got you for a reason, for this season. You're with the right people. You're doing the right thing. It's tough. It takes a lot of energy at times, a lot of mental energy. And Lisa will tell you, sometimes I don't balance that all that well. And she and others sometimes pay a consequence for that. But I'm still convinced it's the right space. It is certainly a very, very difficult place to operate right now.
What is your heart for that area of our world? Yeah, what's your desire? What has Jesus called you to do in that arena?
He's called me to be salt and light with those that agree with me, but also those that don't. from a values or a political persuasion perspective. I have fascinating encounters. I've been blessed to have some of those situations like you just described, you know, and meet people on the other side of the aisle. There's some wonderful brothers and sisters in Christ on the other side of the aisle. You know, they're human too. I have to work and remind myself of that sometimes, because our differences on policy can be pretty stark and different. I mean, we all have opinions. And so we wonder, how can somebody that follows Jesus like I do end up in that particular position or mindset? You know, you still got to figure out how do I love that person while I'm at odds with them on that particular thing. What I've always been able to do, even when I was in my own elected role, was figure out hard how not to personalize that. I can have a policy difference with any given human and not dehumanize them. I don't have to tear them down. Even if I get frustrated with them, I don't.
Do you translate that into your own marriage with each other? You have a teacher and someone in politics and different perspectives. And so how do you guys navigate that as a couple?
We've been a part of some great communities. Or we're part of a small group that all had kids about the same ages as ours. So that birth to two, I think, that did a course called Growing Kids God's Way. And I think you can never take back what you say. So make sure that your words are always ones you want people to remember. And it's something that we have worked extremely hard to do in tempering our tongues, teaching that to our kids so that in the heat of that moment, if it means you're having an argument and you can't continue without saying things that are unkind, you press pause. You take a break, you agree to come back at a different time to finish it out after you've had time to cool off and get that frustration under control.
And we work in we all work in a world now where, you know, popping out 140 characters, you know, speaking what's on your mind as soon as you can come up with it is the norm.
Social media.
Rather than
texting.
Parking it for a second and really measuring twice with your words before you cut, right? And so it's not easy, but again, it's, I think, like Lisa said, because it's been part of our marriage relationship, it does make it a little bit easier for me. I'm not the principal in the politics right now. I work for a congressman, so I can sometimes go in a closet and be the fireball that I feel like being, and that's okay. But it's good. I think we're good for each other in that sense, because we are both very passionate people, and we're passionate about the places that God's put us to be his ambassadors in our work life.
Passionate in that we're not afraid to say what needs to be said.
So I want to hop on that and just maybe take it a little bit of a different direction, because this question just came to mind, and I'm curious at what you guys would say and how you speak into this. You know, you're in the public sector with school and with politics. When it comes to those arenas, when it comes to that area, you know, there's people that I would say can get maybe too obsessed and make it an idol and just, you know, they're consumed with the topic of politics or even like public school and education. And then there's people that are, you know, and I'll be honest with me. Sometimes I just get so frustrated with politics. I'm like, what's the point? And just like totally ignore it and be like, nothing's going to change anyway. Yeah. And so just be like, whatever. What do you think we as followers of Christ are called to do in those areas? Because we're, in the world, but not of the world.
It's funny that you asked that, because as much as we're involved in those areas, we're finding it the most challenging within my family, because I have my mom and my sister who are complete opposites and so politically minded right now that they're having a hard time finding conversations where they can just love each other for who they are. Mm-hmm. And so through that, it's been helpful to just say, as Todd said, they're people. Everyone is a person. It doesn't matter what they believe, as long as you love them. And that, going back to something else, we've always, Todd mentioned the mentor that he had. What's your job? Love others. Plain and simple.
That's the simple job of a Christ follower, is to love others. And I don't mean to reduce that down to just the bumper sticker version that, you know, love wins at all. And no offense to anybody that has that bumper sticker. But literally letting the love of God manifest in you when you're not feeling capable or mentally prepared to love another, particularly those that don't, you just don't feel like loving at times. And it's tough because, again, we are, I think we're in a season where the field that I work in seems to spill into everybody's life in a ridiculous way. And I can say with emphasis that it's been a ridiculous 80 to 90 days. And, you know, I said to Lisa one night, a lot of us were disappointed the morning of November 4th. Then some of us who work in it, you know, kind of parked the disappointment on by November 5th because we had to go back to work and do things. But a lot of folks then moved from disappointment to despair. Then they moved from despair to anger. And then a limited few even further went to like just outright rage. And what I took personal ownership in as many conversations as I could of pulling people back from rage. And I felt like if I could get them from rage, maybe back to maybe just a little bit angry, right? Or maybe if I just get them back to despair, we can at least then have a conversation. And it's tough to argue with somebody or even have a dialogue with somebody that's enraged. And so we have to, I think, start with it's a human. There's differences, disagreements. A lot of these folks, they don't share our faith. Unfortunately, some of the angriest and most enraged do. And that's tough because scripture prescribes how we're supposed to reconcile that. And I think we've kind of parked that.
God is in control. Do you trust God? And when you can bring it back to that conversation that God has a plan and a purpose and he can work all things for good. Do you trust him enough to do that? We're called to do what God wants us to do. And that's so good
because at the end of the day, what is God calling you to do? You know, and it can be as simple as loving your neighbor. Yep. And that can maybe not change the world, but it can change the world for that one person.
Well, I'll add on to that because there's a phrase that all politics are local. And if we actually walk that out of the world of politics into our world of faith, where again, where they seem to mash up every day. If all politics are local, so should our love, right? Mm-hmm. Our initial neighborliness is how we, I think, overcome some of these big national narratives on politics that are just so divided. And, you know, our next door neighbors, they're not on the same page with us in terms of ideology. So what, right? I want to help him take his trash out because he's got a super sloped drive and it's tough on him. I got to keep offering that.
Find peace in the midst of crazy.
For me, getting up before everybody else does and having time to read God's word and direct my path for the day. Mm-hmm. A cup of tea, some quiet time, some prayer, and knowing God's got it. Whatever comes my way. It's been a crazy year. Mm-hmm. A lot's happened. And when he was calling me to teach, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. There was funny thing walking around Kohl's with literally was like, God, I don't know if I can do this. And he's like, I will give you strength, clear as day. And walking into that, because not only do I have to teach, in order to teach autistic kids, I need to work on getting certified. So I'm taking college classes again. So I go from full-time mom to full-time employee to part-time student and whatever mom I can throw in there. And COVID hits and we get shut down and I'm teaching from home, but I have more time to work on my coursework. And it's just every time something comes up, even with the surgery that I had to have that took me 2 weeks out of work, the class that I'm taking is teaching secondary education. I needed 12 credit hours in a secondary classroom. How am I going to do that if I'm in the classroom all the time? I got to spend a full day in the middle school ASD room and a high school ASD room. It's opened up conversation for us to develop a district-wide program for our autistic kids. So taking the bad, seeing how God's using it for good. And it's just amazing to see. It's like, it makes you feel so special when you take the time to look back at what he's planned that you had no clue.
I'm not near as good as that. I'm not. She does wonderful with dedicated morning time. I get some morning time. I usually throw my earbuds in when I walk the dogs first thing. That's about it. That's about my peace. By 7:15 most days, my world is not on fire yet, but by 8, it usually is. And I'm not having a great season of, just pausing and finding peace, just being honest about that. Yeah, there's Lisa and I were just talking about that, just trying to do a better job at discerning which issues literally need like DEFCON 4 attention versus, can it wait for an hour? Can it wait for 2 hours? And
we have been intentional from a marriage perspective of taking a weekend once or twice mm-hmm. a year, just to make sure that we're on track. And
yeah,
sometimes it's frustrating leading up to it, trying to get it planned and executed. But once you have the time, it's like, it's necessary.
So we would do a couple times a year retreat, just the two of us out and away at a hotel. But, between COVID and the last few months, I literally feel like we've lived like 4 years within one. Mm-hmm. So the two it's not really enough. And so I'm not in a great spot, but I will tell you, I love, worship music. I do love scriptures and, just stopping myself to get in them is still a challenge.
Well, Lisa's been steady since she was 5 years old. So, it's going like every day. Here we go. Steady Lisa.
17-year lag. I'm still trying to catch up.
It's the goofiest thing though, because I'm an analytical person. The people that need God to show you that he's real. I've had 4 broken arms. We'll just throw that out there. But when I was in first grade, had a particular break that needed to heal. And my mom prayed very specifically the name of the bone for healing. And when we went back in, the doctor said, it's a miracle. Your bone is healed. We do not need to put another cast on. And just one of those little things that my faith does not waver. It's when something comes up, well, let's wait and see what God has in store for this. And being able to see, I'm a private person. I don't share details. And being in school, in a public school, being able to share with my principal, this is going on. She was, I think, more nervous than I was, just because I trust that whatever the outcome, it's God's plan. And she said, can I share this with the staff? I'm like, sure, that's fine. I'm not going to go around announcing it, but I don't have a problem with them knowing. And so the day I had my surgery, she sends out a weekly update and just said, pray for Lisa Whiteman. She's having surgery today. They found skin cancer. And the number of replies that I got from the staff saying, praying for you, thinking of you, one of the other staff, wishing you good vibes and positive thoughts. It's just like, then because she started that, I was able to reply to it the next day and say, hey, surgery went well. Here's where we're at, still waiting for results, but God is faithful. And here's how I know. Mm-hmm. And I got to send that to everybody. Mm-hmm. and not have a problem with it. So it's just really, really been great to see how God's used these opportunities to be salt and light.
And you know what, that's the, just the thing that I'm taking away from hearing you guys today is just God's faithful. God's mm-hmm. faithful to the one who opened up their heart to him at 5 years old. God's faithful to the one who experienced tragedy and went a different direction, and he's faithful to pursue and chase, and he got your heart too, you know, Todd. And so throughout all of that, through the ups and downs and in your kids' lives, God's faithful. Mm-hmm. And he's writing a story and he's not done with it. And I just think of Philippians 1:6, he who began a good work is going to be faithful to complete it. And that's what I'm just hearing throughout your life. And just an awesome, awesome testimony of God's faithfulness and goodness.